Welcome to ESG Decoded, where we navigate the evolving landscape of environmental, social, and governance, ESG. Join me, Amanda Shea, Caitlin Allen, and Erica Schiller as we explore the intersection of sustainability, innovation, and ethical leadership.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to ESG Decoded. I'm Erica Schiller, and today we're talking about sustainability successes in cement and concrete. This industry is a very heavy emission sector of our global economy, contributing up to 8% of global greenhouse gases. Joining me on this podcast are Kayla Carey of Climco and Grant Quasha of Eco Materials. Grant is the current Chief Executive Officer of Eco Materials and the former Chief Executive Officer of Green Cement. Prior to that, he oversaw investments and operations in GFC Alliance's North American Metals, which employs 1,500 people and has revenues approaching $1 billion. He received his bachelor's and MBA from Harvard. Grant, thank you for joining us. And can you please educate our listeners about Eco Materials? What is your conventional business? And tell us a little bit about what's new at Eco Materials.
Thanks, Erica. Appreciate joining you today. Eco Material Technologies has a simple mission. We're out to decarbonize the built environment. And we do that primarily by targeting the biggest emissions sector, which is cement and concrete. Cement is the glue that puts together concrete. And as you noted, is about responsible for about 8% of global emissions. The way that we reduce the emissions associated with cement and concrete, which are valuable building blocks, critical really to our built environment, is that we use either low value or waste materials, which we then upgrade to replace highly polluting Portland cement in concrete. We call these materials supplementary cementitious materials, or SCMs for short. These SCMs often have low to zero emissions associated with them, and they replace the highly polluting Portland cement. We sell and recycle about 7 million tons a year of SCMs in North America, so we're the largest provider of these types of materials. And we are expanding dramatically into what we call more novel sources of these materials, which are generally harvesting waste ash and harvesting volcanic ash, which is a naturally produced product.
That's great. And so when you think about the growth opportunity, it's primarily in the new products, the supplementary cementitious materials that are kind of novel?
Yes. Traditionally, historically, the bulk of our business and previous businesses that we've put together to make eco material technologies has been focused on repurposing waste materials from power plants. That material flow has been declining over the years, and as such, we've had to invest significantly in alternative sources. And so the nice thing for us is those alternative sources of materials are A, in significant quantity. There's over 2 billion tons of landfilled coal ash in this country, which we want to dig up and repurpose. It also happens to be an environmental issue, whereby repurposing these materials, not only are we replacing highly polluting cement and concrete, we're also cleaning up local communities rather than leaving this material in the ground. The other area that there are billions of tons of material is volcanic ash. And so this material is essentially the same type of material that the Romans built the Colosseum out of 2,000 years ago. However, their process was a lot more antiquated and slow than our current process today. However, these materials can make excellent concrete. In fact, these types of materials that we sell into the market, not only are they greener, they are often more cost efficient, and they make a better and stronger concrete over the long term.
That's great. Thanks for sharing about that. Turning over to Kayla Carey, a senior manager here at Climco, focused on the industrial and cement sectors. Kayla has been working with Eco Materials for over 2 years to bring this low carbon SCM, as Grant explained, supplementary cementitious materials methodology to the market in collaboration with the Climate Action Reserve and many sector experts. Kayla, can you please share more about this methodology, what it means, and why does this activity qualify for carbon credits?
Sure. Thanks, Erica. I'm actually start with the kind of the second half of your question and talk about the why this protocol is needed. So as you both mentioned, cement, it's an extremely emissions intensive industry. There's a stat out there that says if the cement industry were a country, it would actually be the third largest emitter in the world. And I think that really helps to illustrate the magnitude of this challenge and how big of a problem it actually is. This is especially problematic when you consider that traditional cement is it's really difficult to decarbonize. And that's because the emissions are innate in the traditional cement production process. So, at a high level, to make cement, you essentially take limestone and clay, you put it into a giant kiln, heat it to an extremely high temperature, and grind it up. That actually causes a chemical reaction that releases carbon dioxide as a byproduct. And these process emissions account for about half of the sector's total footprint. So, this means that you can't reduce cement emissions simply by switching to a different fuel source. And this is why the sector is considered hard to abate or hard to decarbonize. And, as Grant was saying, one of the key strategies to address these emissions is to replace traditional cement with SCMs. But however, today, the most commonly used SCMs in the industry are these alternatives or byproducts from industrial processes like coal and steel, which are, of course, both either in decline or going through a transition. So these changes are causing a shortage in regional and global traditional SCM supply. So in other words, that means that concrete producers have limited and declining access to these alternative low-carbon materials. So to really, summarize the key issues here, which is really the why behind this protocol, is number one, cement is really hard to decarbonize. Number two, one of the solutions to reduce emissions is getting increasingly difficult to implement. That's because of that limited and shrinking supply. And third, which is kind of the crux to it all, is that breaking into this market and scaling new alternative cement is very difficult. You're competing against a legacy product, which is traditional cement. There are really high capital costs to building new plants, and the current standards and specifications actually can favor conventional products. And this is where the protocol really steps in as a solution. So the purpose of this protocol is to direct financing to companies that are bringing novel or underutilized alternative cements to market or alternative SCMs. And so how does it do that? Well, alternative cement producers can use this protocol to generate carbon credits. The revenue from those credits can then help these companies overcome those barriers to scaling. And again, the focus, it's really on increasing access to novel and underutilized products. So traditional products like conventional fly ash and slag that are already fairly commonplace in the market, those would not be eligible to generate credits. But examples that, Grant was just speaking of, like reclaimed and harvested fly ash and natural materials like volcanic ash, those would be eligible. So the protocol, it's really only for projects that are bringing new materials to market to help fill that supply gap and help the sector decarbonize.
That's great. Thank you, Kayla. And did you want to share a little bit about how the methodology, came together, bringing in kind of other experts and perspectives?
Of course, yeah. And I guess just to define what a methodology is, it's also called a protocol. That's that framework document that really defines what type of projects can generate credits and how the credits or the emission reductions are measured. And one of the key elements to ensuring a high-quality protocol is stakeholder engagement. And as you mentioned at the beginning, the Climate Action Reserve, who's an extremely well-respected carbon registry, they actually led the protocol development process. And it also included a public comment period and a working group of over 15 organizations. And I think we had a really, diverse range of experts on this group. So there was representation from academia, NGOs, government, industry, and carbon markets. So it was a really good mix. And the core focus of this work group was to ensure that the protocol met certain carbon market principles. I know we have, limited time here today, so I'll just go into a few examples of what those principles are. And number one is additionality. So additionality essentially means that any carbon project must be above and beyond business as usual. And there are a few ways to demonstrate this. First is ensuring that there are no legal mandates that require the production or utilization of novel products. So, for example, in North Carolina, there's actually a regulation that requires a certain amount of ash from very specific landfills to be harvested. So that mandated ash would not be eligible to generate credits. Second way to demonstrate additionality is looking into the common practice. So you can only get credits for materials that have a very low market penetration rate. So, for example, as I mentioned, fly ash directly from a power plant without any beneficiation, that would not be eligible because it's considered too common in the market today. Another principle is confirming that the emission reductions are real. So the protocol actually has built-in requirements to confirm that all projects are indeed displacing traditional cement, and it includes really robust calculations to make sure that the number of credits is accurate and conservative. I think the final topic I wanted to touch on that the workgroup discussed in detail is double counting. So essentially, you know, how do we make sure that two parties are not claiming the same emission reduction? The protocol addresses this by defining the default owner of the credits as the SEM producer or that entity that is bringing these new novel materials to market. And there are some additional safeguards in place as well, you know, that are a bit more unique to this protocol that require SEM producers to attest and disclose their ownership to avoid any double counting issues. So, you know, those are just a few examples of the topics that the work group discussed to ensure that the protocol was able to meet the Climate Action Reserve's high quality standards.
That's great. Thank you, Kayla. Grant, building on that, can you share more about sustainability trends that you're seeing in the concrete and building material space more broadly?
Sure. You know, I think it's interesting in the last, you know, I think folks have only really sort of woken up to the massive impact that cement and concrete have to emissions really in the past 2 or 3 years, I would say, as it come to the forefront. Unlike other areas like power generation or vehicles, which have really been front of mind for 20 years. And part of that's just because it's such a hard area to decarbonize. That said, you know, the industry is really focused and starting to focus much more on the green solutions here. And the way that, you know, I sort of characterize it is it's a bit of a barbell solution because it's a really big problem. 4 billion tons a year of cement are produced globally. And so that's 4 billion tons a year of emissions approximately. And so what we're doing is on one side of that, which is where this protocol plays in, which is we're trying to reduce the amount of Portland cement in concrete by using other materials, right, that are less polluting or sometimes not polluting at all. The other side of it is how do you turn the existing fleet of Portland cement kilns much greener? As Kayla noted, there's two main sources of emissions. There's fuels and there's process emissions associated with the limestone calcination. And so folks are working on that. That said, that you know, we view the first side, which is the SCM replacement, to be the more rapidly scalable and the more cost efficient method to do this. And so people are really paying a lot more attention to it in the market, and people are wanting the greener products that we're selling, not just for, frankly, their performance characteristics or their cost, but for the green characteristics associated. That said, as Kayla noted, other than a couple of really narrow spots, there's no carbon tax in the US, nor do I foresee one anytime soon. There is a carbon regime in Europe, but there's really no way that folks like ourselves, up until this protocol, had any ability to get a boost for some of these novel projects to try to accelerate the rollout of these non-traditional materials to accelerate the decarbonization of the sector. And so the protocol really plays a key role in an area where, you know, we really see limited government help and or intervention. I mean, there's some little bits in the IRA that sort of try to help the industry a little bit, but it's fractional and infinitesimally small compared to the power production sector, et cetera. So, you know, my view is that if you're a market participant in building materials or the built environment, which virtually everyone is, right? Everyone lives in a home. Everyone mostly goes to an office or a workplace. And let me tell you, there's going to be concrete there. And you're really concerned about the emissions impacts of that built environment. Well, one way you can really assuage some of those and help accelerate the decarbonization of the sector is by supporting initiatives like this protocol, which allows folks like ourselves to invest more heavily in these solutions, which are, you know, at scale, proven, and are frankly probably the most cost-efficient ways for you to reduce emissions from cement and concrete.
That's great. I have a question about like the physical aspects of this. Were there challenges as well to show the performance characteristics of bringing alternative SCMs?
So the performance characteristics of our materials are generally excellent. The nice thing is that, you know, as Kayla noted, you know, while not eligible for the credits, the traditional sources of these materials, power plant produced fly ash, steel slag, they've been used for decades and they are not eligible for the credits, but they have been, you know, used in hundreds of millions of tons in virtually every road or bridge that you're driving around in this country. And so all 50 departments of transportation around this country in every state, they know these materials. In many cases, they prefer these materials and critical infrastructure. So the testing is out there. Now, we have to redo that testing for the novel versions of these materials, right? So the harvested ash that we take up, whether it's harvested coal ash, whether it's harvested volcanic ash, we still have to obviously redo all the testing, et cetera, just to make sure that, you know, these materials meet all the criteria, and they do. But, you know, that's part of our whole process, and one where we've been working extensively with the state DOTs to make sure it works well. It's another advantage of what we're doing, which is to say, we're not fully reinventing the wheel here. We're not making concrete out of algae, which is, you know, cool sounding. But if you think about how, you know, basic the concrete and materials industry is, how slow it is to change, it's dominated by engineers, it's dominated by administrators. And that's a good thing in many ways, because you don't want a fast moving set of engineers changing specifications for bridges and roads and critical infrastructure on the fly. You want to make sure that those roads last. You want to make sure that you're safe. And so what we do is we say, you know, guys, you've been using this type of material for decades, and you know it's really good. It's the best. We're going to come up with it in a different way, in a novel way, but it's going to be the same stuff, essentially. And so in that way, you get excellent performance. You get the surety that, you know, your material is going to perform over the long term. But, you know, you're able to, you know, decarbonize from a larger growing amount of material rather than the traditional supply, which is now declining.
Appreciate those insights, Grant. Kayla, can you close us out by sharing about when we expect our first low carbon SCM credits to become available and how interested parties can find out more?
Yeah, of course. And first, I just want to say thank you both. And I think this has been a really great conversation. Grant and his team are working on so many innovative and impactful projects in this space, and EcoMaterials is a great partner. So I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, more projects come to fruition. But, you know, as for the credits, we expect the first credits to be issued sometime in the next few months. So if you're interested in learning more about these projects, please don't hesitate to reach out. There's actually a contact page on our website, climco.com. Send us a note and our team will be sure to get you in touch with the right folks.
Great. We'll put that link in the show notes and also a link about EcoMaterials if folks want to learn more about the materials and the specs and how you guys are operating. We are just scratching the surface on the cement space, so please tune in for more on this sector and other sustainability trends on our ESG Decoded podcast. Thank you to Kayla and Grant for joining us today, and thank you for listening.
Whether you're a seasoned ESG practitioner or embarking on your sustainability journey, ESG Decoded is your trusted source for inspiration and actionable insights for responsible business practices. Subscribe on your favorite streaming platforms to be notified of new episodes drop biweekly on Tuesday mornings, and connect with us at ESG Decoded on social media or by visiting www.climco.com.